nation under God is our demand. And send this evil light shout back to Satan where it came from. Let the word of God revive our dying land. For Jesus Christ is coming back again in all his glory. And every eye shall see him on that day. Why a new anointing of God's power is coming on us. To boldly tell the world you must be saved. Because astrology won't save you. Your horoscope won't save you. The Bible says these things are all farce. If you're born again, you don't need to look to the stars for your answer. Because you can look to the very one who made those stars. History tells us time and time again. To live like there's no God makes you a fool. If you want to see kids live right, stop handing out condoms. And start handing out the word of God in school.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, as the attention of most people is fixed on what's happening as far as Iraq is concerned, why, there are things happening here in America that should be a very great concern. The news broadcast this evening, NBC 6 o'clock news said, well, the unemployment rate is flat at 6%. Well, just a couple of weeks ago when it went up to 6%, why, that was a mark that we were really moving into a recession. But, of course, now it's just flat. Nothing's happening, just 6%. Of course, that 6% unemployment really doesn't represent what's happening in the country. Those are just the government figures. They simply ignore another 5% or so of people who just can't get jobs. And the tragedy is today that American economy is moving into recession. And if you look and see what happened on the sales over Christmas, they really were down. And, of course, many, many of the small retailers are in real problems. You go down on the Pacific Avenue here in Santa Cruz where I live, and some of the stores are beginning to close up. We see certainly many of our factories are moving from our community. Some of them are going south of the border because they can no longer really compete effectively in the markets here. In the United States, other countries are moving their factories here. For instance, Nissan, Toyota, Honda are coming in and taking an ever larger percentage of the American car market. General Motors, still the largest car manufacturer in the world, is down. Its profits will be down 25% this year. And, of course, it's going to have to start paying off somewhere between $20 and $29 billion that it owns its pension fund. And it's only making a total profit of $10 billion a year. How long will it take to pay back the pension fund? And, of course, as we look down the line, what happens to the market in which the funds of the pension fund are already invested if the market goes lower? down the line. And right now, I feel it's probably being propped up by government buying and by collusion between the Federal Reserve and certainly many of the major stockbrokers to keep the stock market from falling too rapidly and causing alarm among the American people. But I really believe that when we go to war with Iraq, and I think that's one of the major reasons for going to war with Iraq, there's a diversion. And when we go to war with Iraq, why we'll see the market drop even much further. And if there is any violence or retaliation here, and certainly Saddam Hussein has promised there will be, why there could be a much further drop. But of course, if anything happens in America, why the government will be able to blame anything that happens on that wicked Saddam Hussein. Well, right now, of course, we have with us on the line Ron Brown. And Ron has been in the press vessels for a long period of time. The reason I'm having him on, because if we go into an inflationary cycle, which I'm firmly convinced we will down the line, why those people who are in fixed assets, and I'm talking about bonds, insurance funds, annuities, pension funds, because pension funds are pegged to dollars, can really have some very, very serious problems. And of course, the question is not how do you make money. The question is how do you preserve what you have. So, Ron Brown, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's good to be with you, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you sort of give us your take? Because you've been following this thing for probably pretty much as long as I have, haven't you?
Yeah, I first got involved in around 78.
Oh, 78. Well,
24 years I've been in the business.
All right, fine. Well, tell us what your take is on what's going on today and what you think people ought to be doing.
Well, I personally believe that silver is the best investment in the world right now, not only from a potential upside standpoint, but simply from preserving your savings, as you were talking about. When I start the conversation with people for the first time on silver, I usually start with a almost ridiculously bold statement and then spend the rest of my time trying to restore my credibility and defend the statement. So what I usually say is that at this moment in history, silver is not only the greatest investment opportunity you have ever had in your lifetime or will ever have in your lifetime, it quite literally is the best investment opportunity of world history.
Well, that's pretty strong.
That's pretty strong. Okay, now I can spend the next hour trying to defend it. You see, if you think back, gold and silver have been treasures throughout recorded history, right? You can go back to 1,000 years before Nebuchadnezzar, and gold and silver were the treasures of that age. Now, as a treasure, it's not consumed; it's hoarded, right? So what was hoarded 1,000 years before Nebuchadnezzar passed on to the next generation and the next civilization and the next, and each one added to the pot. So over 5,000 years of history, the world has been accumulating more gold and more silver above ground. And that was true till about, let's say, the 1800s. And that's when science started to develop many different applications, industrial applications, for the use of silver. And, of course, they used silver in mirrors, and then we've all heard about colloidal silver and silver's ability to kill pathogens and germs. And then around 1850, photography came on the scene and increased the use for silver there. And then about 1900, we saw the electronics industry, and as the Industrial Revolution took charge, then the application for silver just started to accelerate. By 1960 or so, is when we started to run into trouble because we were using silver in our coinage, and yet the industrial demand for silver was starting to crowd out the money we needed for our coinage. So by the early 60s, it was costing more than 10 cents for a silver dime. In other words, the cost of silver in a dime was more than 10 cents. So at that point, the politicians had to make some decisions. And as you might know from your studies, the politicians usually make the wrong decisions. So what did they do? In 63, and I'll never forget this because I was taking my first monetary theory course at LSU when Lyndon Johnson called a press conference and said, "My fellow Americans, silver has become too valuable to be used as money." And I remember shaking my head way back then and saying, "Gosh, I thought money was supposed to be valuable, you know." But what did they do? If you think about it, they demonetized silver, took all the silver out of our coinage, As soon as the U.S. did it, almost every nation in the world immediately followed suit. So in effect, you dumped 4,000 or 5,000 years of accumulation of silver as money, right, into the open market, saying industrial users, you can have it all. So in effect, they dumped over 10 billion ounces of silver into the market. Now, obviously, that was more silver than industry needed for many, many, many years. And so that glut of silver drove the price down to where there was no incentive to produce it, so the mining industry fell apart. Over the last 20, 30 years, the mining, silver mining industry is basically non-existent. 75% of all the silver produced in the world today is simply a byproduct of a copper mine, a lead mine, a zinc mine, a nickel mine, and some comes out of a gold mine. So what you have is a very inelastic supply curve for silver. In other words, the cost of silver has very little to do with the decision to produce more silver. It depends on whether you need more copper, lead, or zinc. And as we go deeper into recession, then they're shutting down the copper, lead, and zinc mines because of the reduced economic activity. So you're taking down the silver production with it. So it's, you can see what's happened over 40, 50 years. The world started consuming more silver than it was producing. And over the last 40, 50 years, we've literally consumed that whole glut of silver. The most recent run, we're running 100 million ounces minimum shortfall every year. So just over the last 13 years, we've probably consumed somewhere between 1.5 billion ounces and 2 billion ounces more than the world produced. So, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that if you continue to consume more than you produce, then at some point you're going to run out. And that's where we stand now. The glut of silver is just about gone. In the warehouses around the globe, according to Ted Butler, you can only identify about 120 million ounces of silver. Yet if you're looking at gold, there's at least 2 billion ounces of gold because that's hoarded by the central banks, right? So you've got much more gold above ground than you do silver, and yet the gold-to-silver ratio, in other words, gold is 75 times the price of silver. So it's a situation that can't be sustained for very much longer. And that when the silver finally triggers, as it did back in 78, 79, back then silver went from $5 to $52 an ounce in 1 year. So here we are this time, Stan, that you've got probably 10 to 20 times more paper assets, right? Because we've been increasing, inflating the money supply all over the globe, and yet we've been consuming the silver, and we probably have at least, probably not as a fourth as much silver above ground as we did back in 79. So you've got 10 to 20 times as much paper chasing one-fourth as much silver. So does it take a lot of imagination to figure that silver may approach that $50 an ounce and go much higher?
So you think that silver is a pretty good investment, but then in what form would you buy it in?
There's lots of different forms. My favorite form is what we call the old pre-65 junk bags. And that's simply, our coinage up to 1964 were 90% silver, dimes, quarters, and halves. And, of course, they've taken all the silver out of them, but you can buy those bags, and a bag, by definition, is $1,000 face value of those coins. So if you were buying...
And how much silver is in that?
If you were to take, first off, $1,000 would be like 10,000 silver dimes.
Right.
If you took those 10,000 dimes, melted them down, refined them into pure silver ingots, you would have approximately 720 ounces of silver.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, is there a shortage? Is there plenty of silver coins at the present time? Is there? Certainly, I know those bags have been circulating, ever since the late 60s. So they've just been circulating. Is there any shortage of them, or are they simply an abundant supply?
Well, the shortage comes when the surge in monetary demand. I'll give you an example. Back in January of 1999, remember when all the focus was on Y2K and the countdown started? And as we turned the corner into 99, early January, I could purchase those bags around $3,800 an ounce when silver was right at $5. 2 weeks later, when all the people started running, you know, jump on the bandwagon to buy some silver, because think about it, these little coins would be perfect for barter if we went into some type of monetary crisis, right? So in a two-week period, the bags went from $3,800 my cost to $5,800 my cost. That's almost a 60% premium over their silver content value. And the price of silver did zero. So what that tells you is there's not very many bags out there. And when the demand comes on stream, the bags just dry up very quickly.
All right. But, of course, right now there's plenty of them. And because most people really aren't too concerned about this. And with all the uncertainties out there, why a lot of people are not really looking forward to a rise in the price of silver. Now, certainly we know during the Great Recession why the price of silver fell, at least temporarily. And then I think one day why FDR suddenly doubled the price of silver overnight. And, of course, Bernard Baruch held most of the world's silver. He did very well.
Right.
And they actually talked about nationalizing silver, but they never did it, did they?
No. In fact, they didn't do anything with silver until 1963 when Lyndon Johnson just said, we're going to take silver out of the coinage. And he never did anything as far as confiscating or anything like that. In fact, you had a certain period of time to take your old silver certificates. I'm sure a lot of people out there listening have seen those. They were a claim on silver, and so they gave you a period of time after they made the announcement that you could exchange those silver certificates for silver, and a lot of people did.
Well, now, of course, the problem that we face today is the fact that most people don't understand money. Traditionally, money was something that had intrinsic value. It wasn't a piece of paper. It was a gold coin, a silver coin, or a coin that was redeemable in either gold or silver. And, of course, our banking system was built upon the fact that you would have a gold certificate, say, for $100, and you didn't want to carry $100 in gold with you, but you could take that to the bank, and they would, by law, be required to give you $100 in gold, as it were. And, of course, this then put brakes on the ability of government to print as much money as it wanted. But, of course, once you remove the anchor of gold and silver from a monetary system, you had a fiat money system, and then the bankers could print as much money as they wanted to. It was simply paper. It was redeemable in absolutely nothing. But people didn't understand that because they remembered when money was gold and then money was gold notes. And then, of course, those gold notes were redeemable. And then even if they weren't redeemable, at least there was the anchor of gold up until 1991 that kept government from printing as much as it wanted to. And then after August 15th, 1991, with silver removed from our currency, and with the gold window closed so that no country in the world could redeem gold at $35 an ounce as they had prior to that fateful day. From that point on, why all the countries of the world, their currencies have floated in relationship to one another. The dollar has been the reserve currency of the world, which has given us a tremendous advantage. But the problem is that if the countries of the world ever lose confidence in the stability of the dollar, all those dollars will come flooding back into the United States, and we'll have a chaotic inflation. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah. The only place you were wrong, it was 1971, not 1991. I'm sure that's...
I'm sorry. August 15th, 1971.
Right.
You're absolutely right. I remember the day so well. Man.
Yeah, and what makes it worse than them just printing all this bogus money is they don't just print it. They lend it into circulation, and that makes it infinitely worse. And that's why we have the crisis that we're approaching, because... You see, since 1913, when we created this thing called the Federal Reserve System, it allowed these private bankers to take over the creation of money and loan money to the government. So the politicians probably went along with it because now they could promise the people something for nothing, and instead of having to go back and raise the taxes to pay for their promises, they could simply fund those deficits through the Federal Reserve. And what happens is the Treasury creates an IOU note called a Treasury bond, a Treasury bill, a Treasury note, and they present that to the Federal Reserve System, and they say, okay, we can loan you money based on this collateral, and then they create Federal Reserve notes. So you're really loaning that money in circulation, so all that money that's being created has to be paid an interest on.
No, but even more than that, of course, it's never going to be paid back. We're never going to pay back our national debt. And, of course, they owe another $20 trillion. Anybody would like that article on the $20 trillion? We have it. They owe another $20 trillion in benefits that they promised that they know they're never going to be able to pay. But they just sort of hope that everybody will forget that they were the ones who voted for it. Now they'll retire with their fat pensions and leave the public holding the bag. And that's the great tragedy of what's happened today. So many people, for instance, in many of the great corporations, the people had a pension fund. It was all invested in that company's stock. And when this company's stock became worthless, why the life savings of so many people were destroyed. And I'm talking about Enron and WorldCom and the other major corporations that have recently gone bankrupt. In fact, even Conseco, which is one of our largest national insurance companies, has just filed for bankruptcy. So we're going to see increasingly this going to happen. And, of course, people have to protect their assets now, or there may not be an opportunity later. So what should people do?
Well, the first thing is we have to get their attention, because the Wall Street spin masters are convincing people that it's just a temporary thing and we're about to go back into prosperity, and just hang on and you bought your stocks for the long term. And I tell you, it's so sad to watch people getting wiped out in their savings and their retirement plans, because they can't see what is happening in the economy. And so where we have come from, or where we're at the stage where silver has to literally explode, is that see, this debt bubble that almost crashed, as we talked about, in 1979-80, remember, gold went to 870, interest rates 21%, and so forth. Then they got control of it, and then in 82, under Reagan, the grand conservative, right, we started on a spending binge. And he basically, because in 82, we were about to go into a depression, if you'll recall, and Reagan came out and said, we're going to damn the torpedoes, we're going to spend our way out of this. And that's what started this stock market boom that it lasted almost 20 years. Well, in that boom, it went into insanity. And every time it would try to correct itself, first in 87, remember the market crashed, and it came right back up. And in 91 and 92, it started to crash again. And then in 90, I can't remember all the dates, but 97, Southeast Asia crashed, it was Mexico and so forth. So every time the market would try to correct itself from its excesses, Greenspan and the Fed would come to the rescue and they would start the printing presses. Now what that does over a period of time is it removes all fear, because people know Big Brother is going to take care of any recession, right? They'll come in and just start the printing presses rolling, and they'll bail you out. So now you have by the time the market peaked in year 2000, they were just exuberant. They were borrowing off their credit cards to invest in the stock market. And so that psychology has to be dashed and changed, and unfortunately it won't be changed for most people until they're wiped out.
And, of course, this is really what happens. In fact, the way that the system is designed is that the bankers will do very well and that people will be impoverished. That's the way they set the thing up, because the Federal Reserve System is a privately owned central banking system owned by bankers for their benefit, not for giving stability to the society. And, of course, the whole idea of the Federal Reserve System, it was sold to the American people back in 1913, we're going to do away with boom and bust. And, of course, by 1921, we had our first depression. Then they turned on the printing presses. We had the Roaring Twenties. And then, of course, they had the major contraction in the 1930s. And I've always been very suspicious that was done so that they could justify calling in the gold. Because once the central banks owned all the gold in the world, then, of course, what were people going to use for money? You had no alternative other than to use their paper money. And what people don't understand is that they have created such massive debt, it's beyond the comprehension of the average individual. Now, it took from the time of the inception of the United States in 1789 up until the end of the Carter administration, and that would have been 1980. So it was from 1789 to 1980 for our federal government to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. By the time Ronald Reagan left the White House 8 years later, we had $2.7 trillion in the national debt. Today, we have about $6.4 trillion. But that is national debt. There is an overall debt, and these figures come from the Federal Reserve. Anybody wants them can get them. Today, the overall debt, including national, state, corporate, personal, credit card, mortgage debt, is in the neighborhood of $31 trillion. And what's the most amazing is that in the last 3 years, that figure has increased from 25 to $31 trillion. It's gone up, or 25 and a half to 31. So it's really gone up about $5.5 trillion just in 3 years. That's the total debt. And you have all this massive debt. There's no money out there behind it. And, of course, it's going to have to be simply liquidated. And, of course, it's going to be liquidated off the backs of the people. And, of course, there are going to be some difficult times. And, of course, ordinarily, if you had a stable economy, you'd go through a period of contraction and come back again. We no longer have a stable economy because our leaders, our globalist leaders, have another agenda. And that is, of course, that they are shipping our major industries to other nations. So the industrial foundation of our nation, without an industrial foundation, we will no longer be a sovereign or a powerful nation. Our industrial base is being extended to communist China and to Malaysia and to Taiwan and to into Mexico and into South America. And our textile industry is going, our much electronic industry is going. Most of our car parts are built in other parts of the world and then brought here and simply assembled. Maytag is moving south of the border. Most of the people who make the household things that we use, the washing machines and refrigerators, and they're all going out of the country. So this is not going to be a normal recovery at the end of this because there is this other agenda. And that is redistribution of the world's wealth. It is the old idea from those, according to their, to take from according to their ability, to give according to their need. It's a Marxist dictum. So the rest of the people really throughout the world need money, and they need industry, so they're going to take it from us and transfer it there. That is the globalist intention, of course, to gradually raise the living standard of the average American to that of the Mexican or Chinese peasant. And they're well on the way to doing it. And before this whole thing is over, it's going to be simply a matter of survival. Well, Ron, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to get any more information? Do you have a packet and information you can get to them?
Yeah, I do. And I wrote a report on silver a while back, and it's called The Unbelievably Bullish Case for Silver, A Truly Remarkable Investment for Uncertain Times. And I think that's what we are in, uncertain times. So if they would like to get a copy of it, just call me at 1-800-595-0561.
1-800-595-0561. All right, you'll send them out a packet?
I sure will.
All right, our telephone number here is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. So if you've got a question, maybe you disagree with what we're saying, I'd like to hear from you. I know that we had a call on another program not too long ago, and somebody said, look, I heard all of this back in the 70s, and, you know, that the price of these precious metals are going to go up, and, you know, I should never have sold my property, and, you know, I'd be really well off now. I sold it in the 70s, and I bought gold and silver. I pointed out to him, well, if you really sold your property in the 70s and bought gold and silver, I mean, gold went from $35 an ounce to $850 an ounce, and silver went from $1.29 an ounce up to $50. You probably are very wealthy today. he had nothing more to say at that point. But, of course, it's true. I mean, people have been talking about the things going up in price for a long time. And yet, of course, just within the last, two and a half months, silver has moved very strongly. Gold, for the first time, has broken 350 in a long, long time and is staying up above that. And platinum has been moving very strongly as well. So all of the precious metals have been moving, but is that a reflection of the weakening of the American dollar? Or is that the markets are beginning to, for the last time, begin to move freely? Because, of course, they've been consistently manipulated by the people of great wealth for many years. Are these things beginning to break loose now, or is this a reflection of the weakening dollar, do you think?
It's a combination of all the things. Richard Russell of the Dow Theory Letter says it best. And every time the economy or the market starts to go into a crisis, he comes out with his same slogan, and that's inflate or die. And if you think about it, this bogus system we've created is all based on debt. We've created our whole society on a mountain of IOU nothings, right, on paper, on debts. So by definition, it becomes like a Ponzi scheme in that you must always have more money in circulation next year so you can continue to fund and service the debt on the ever-growing debt structure. So you cannot allow the system to go into contraction, and of course when the bubble broke, that was a major contraction in the money supply, right? We've seen, what, $9 trillion, $7 trillion worth of wealth destroyed in the stock market. So what that does is throw the Fed and the government into the position of having to pull out all the stops.
We're going to have to interrupt you there. We're going to be back in just 3 minutes and finish up on that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree that we have an important message and you're going to get information here and listen to guests here that you're not going to hear elsewhere, we hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And all you have to do is call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. Now, if any of you would like to see these Fed statistics, they actually come off the Internet, but I would be glad to send you a summary of these, at least on the last 10 years or so. You'll find them fascinating. If you want them, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our December newsletter certainly goes into the background of the economy and, of course, the history of money, the occult history of our monetary system. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, you hear me talking about the spiritual battle all the time, but there is an occult force even behind our monetary system. And I think you'll be fascinated as you read the December newsletter. You may not necessarily agree with it, but it will give you food for thought and an understanding of what's really going on monetarily today. And of course, this is the same thing with our January newsletter, pointing out very simply that the coming war with Iraq will serve a number of purposes, extend the Pax Americana, station American troops in Central Asia, be useful so that America can move the world towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. But also, of course, the war will act as a distraction so that when we do move into the financial problems, they'll say, well, it wasn't our fault. It was that wicked Saddam Hussein. That's the reason we have all the problems economically in America today, and especially if there is some sort of biological attack. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be a biological attack from Saddam Hussein. I am saying that we had an anthrax attack immediately after 9/11, and who would have suspected it other than Dick Cheney and George Bush? And then if you would like to see a letter I just got from Larry Klayman today of Judicial Watch pointing out they're trying to find out why the White House started the White House staff at Dick Cheney, George Bush, and all the people in the White House on Cipro on the evening of September 11th. Why did they start them on Cipro? in anticipation of an anthrax attack. Nobody in the right mind was thinking of an anthrax attack, with that memory of the billowing smoke and the collapse of the trade centers and their minds, the attack on the Pentagon, except the White House staff, which seemed to know that an attack was coming, and they were started on anthrax, on Cipro for anthrax, and nobody else was. And Larry Klayman's trying to get them to tell us why, what information they had, and why, if they knew there was information and an anthrax attack was coming, why nothing was done. And since we know, of course, all the evidence points to the fact that the anthrax came from our own military labs, they can't find out who did it. But, of course, the people in the White House were already being protected. It was just the people in the Postal Service and elsewhere who were not told that the White House was anticipating an anthrax attack. So if we have another attack associated with the with what's coming, the war against Iraq, will they know where it comes from? Will they be able to anticipate it and protect themselves? They are building a bunker today for Dick Cheney, right? It's in the neighborhood he lives in Washington, D.C. But, of course, nobody will explain the explosions there because the information is classified. And we have that article, and we've had reports from several other people. I believe we're moving into difficult times. And, of course, we hope that many of you out there will, of course, accept what we're saying. We really want you to begin preparing for the difficult times, because only those who are prepared are going to get through this, of course, with the Lord's help. We're not going to do this on our own. We're called to do the best we can, prepare for ourselves, prepare to help others, and then in the final analysis, we're going to have to recognize it's going to be up to the Lord. Well, remember our telephone number. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletters, the number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our website is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And please feel free to go there, pull down our newsletters, our information, and record it, and copy our radio programs, get them out. Help us to get the truth out across America, from sea to shining sea. Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Ron Wilson, Ron Brown, and we've been talking about gold and silver, but mainly about silver and the coming shortage of silver. If you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, you know, if you have a question, something you'd like to know, anything you'd ever wanted to ask and were afraid to, why, this is the time to do it. Again, the number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Ron, what about some of these medallions there? Minted, they're 1 ounce of silver in them. They look very, very pretty. They basically, I guess they cost, what, about 10% more than silver, a face value of silver? What's that?
Something like that, yeah. About 50 cents over spot and then a little commission, so figure 60, 65 cents over spot. Price of silver, so that's a little over 10%.
All right, fine. So are they a good investment, or do you think that basically just silver coins are the best way to go?
Oh, you know, you want a little diversification in your silver portfolio. So, yeah, those 1 ounces are nice. I'm even starting to really like the U.S. Silver Eagles. I was kind of against them for a long time because you pay an extra dollar for them. But when you consider that the U.S. Treasury and the government is now totally out of silver, they don't dare close down the Silver Eagle program because that would just draw attention to the shortage. So I think what you're going to see is a chronic shortage of even those coins from here on out. So I think they will hold their premium quite well.
You mean they're costing you a dollar over the silver value?
Well, let's say you were buying the generic rounds that we just talked about, and let's say silver's at $5, which is not quite five, but let's say you're paying $5.65 for them today.
Right.
To buy the Eagles, you would have to upgrade and pay about $6.65.
I see.
Pay a dollar more for those than you would for the generic brand.
Well, now, how much is the gold coins over their face value in gold?
Gold is about $355 an ounce, depending on the size coin. If you buy a 1 ounce coin, you're going to pay 5 to 6% over the price of gold. And as you go to the smaller coins, you're going to pay a little higher premium.
All right, fine. And first, do you recommend people consider getting any gold at all at this time?
Of course. Yeah, I'm probably different than most people or advisors. They would probably advise maybe 75% gold and 25% silver. I just believe silver is such a no-brainer as far as an investment that, you know, think about it. We have an opportunity for investment that will go from $5 to $50 an ounce in the next two, or even $100 an ounce in the next 2 years, and in my opinion, zero risk. I mean, how often can you find an opportunity like that? So I tell people to put 75% into silver and 25% into gold.
All right, fine. And so now, so far, are many people buying silver at this time, though? You know, of course, really what happens is people usually don't start buying until till the market's topped out. I know very well in the stock market, you know, the old saying is that you know you've reached the top of the market when the last bear becomes a bull. And I saw that, and with a number of my friends who stayed out of the stock market until just the very end, and finally, you know, when it was reaching to 11.50, somewhere up in there, they started talking about the new economy. You had to get into this, and of course, they jumped in, and just before it began to crumble. Are many people actually getting into silver at this time? Are they heeding your warning? Or most people really, they can, they sitting on the beach, you know, they know there's a hurricane offshore someplace, but the water's calm, the sky's blue, and why bother to do anything now? Because maybe it's not going to hit us.
Well, it's starting to improve, but it's a slow process because it's hard to destroy 20 years of euphoric psychology. You know, think about it. Most people, you know, in their 40s or 50s didn't start investing until maybe their 30s. So in their whole investment lifetime, all they've seen is a bull market stock, you know, bull stock market. On the other hand, all they've seen is silver do nothing. So it takes a long time to change that psychology around. And it's kind of like a gigantic tug-of-war where you have the paper assets on one side and the gold bulls on the other side. And for the last 20 years, the people on the paper side have had total control of it, right? They could just jerk us around at will. But now what you're seeing is people are losing confidence day by day. You know, all the spin that the stock market's going to come back. They've told us that four times and it keeps going back down. They've lowered interest rates, 12, 13 times, and it's not restoring the market. So people are starting to lose a little hope. And it's like every day a few people jump off the paper side and they run around and jump on and grab the rope on the gold side. So the balance of power is gradually shifting. And at some point it's going to snap and we'll just take total control and the paper assets will lose, you know, all of their ability to manipulate.
Well, now tell me what's happening in other countries as far as gold and silver are concerned. Of course, the Indians have always been heavy purchasers of silver because, you know, they like to have a lot of silver and jewelry and things like that. That's sort of a sign of wealth. But my understanding is that they've even started to allow them to accumulate gold in communist China today, you know, for the first time in history, and that the Japanese are buying gold. I know that they were a few months ago. Are they still buying it?
Oh, correct. They're over double their demand over the last year. So, yes, as the Japanese banking crisis continues to unravel, then people are seeking refuge of gold there. Well, and a platinum, too, by the way.
You mean they're buying platinum in Japan? Or what?
Well, Japan is kind of the 40% of the demand for platinum comes out of Japan, one because of the auto industry and the catalyst. But also because in Japan, they sell platinum jewelry the way we sell gold jewelry.
I see.
And so platinum is exploded, you know, went from, 240, but when it was about the same price as gold, and it hit 640, it's over $600 right now, while gold's still down to 350, even though it's up 25% in the last 12 months.
Well, I think that it demonstrates the fact that people are really beginning to be concerned about the stability of our monetary system, as well they should be, because even Alan Greenspan is concerned. In fact, on the 19th of December, he said this at a meeting of the Economic Club of New York. Although the gold standard could hardly be portrayed as having produced a period of price tranquility, it was the case that the price level in 1929 was not much different on net from what it had been in 1800. But in the two decades following the abandonment of the gold standard in 1933, the consumer price index in the United States nearly doubled. And in the four decades after that, prices quintupled. Monetary policy unleashed from the constraint of domestic gold convertibility has allowed a persistent over-issuance of money. As recently as a decade ago, central bankers, having witnessed more than a half a century of chronic inflation, appeared to confirm that a fiat currency was inherently subject to excess. That's Alan Greenspan speaking in December. Did you pick up on that?
I'm sure glad you mentioned that, because that tells a story, what we were just talking about, how the balance of power is shifting. James Sinclair wrote a brilliant article on that, and he basically said, don't ever ignore what the Fed chairman says, because he doesn't say anything, you know, out of slight. He's there for just off the cuff. He's thought it out well. So why would Mr. Greenspan, the Fed chairman, all of a sudden, after years, suddenly start talking about gold?
Well, I couldn't help but wonder if he was sort of warning the elite on the inside that they better start positioning themselves for the difficult times that lie ahead.
Here's what I think's happening. As we were at the break, we were talking about they have to inflate or die, right? In other words, we have a debt structure that must be serviced, and when the dot-com bubble burst in year 2000, it's destroyed a tremendous amount of wealth and is threatening to send us into a deflationary collapse. Because, see, if I don't pay you the $100,000 I owe you, then you don't pay Tom, Dick, and Harry, and then they don't pay, and it feeds on itself into a deflationary implosion. So they must at all costs figure out a way to inflate. And that's exactly what they're doing. And didn't you have Bob Chapman on the...
Yes, we've had Bob on several times.
Well, and he's talking about all the money that's being created, and that's correct. And so what it amounts to is they're desperately trying to print money faster than the market can destroy it, and that's quite a challenge, the way the market is destroying wealth. But they know when they start the printing presses rolling, it's going to have its impact on the U.S. dollar, and it already is, right? The dollar is down, what, 18% against the dollar index? So as the dollar goes down, the foreigners who were glad to buy our treasury bonds and hold our dollars for the last 20 years because they wanted to trade with us, now all of a sudden are losing on both ends. They're losing on the currency exchange, and they're losing on their investments. And so now they want to take their dollars and run, which means the Fed has to print more and more money faster and faster and faster. So I think the Fed knows they're about to lose control of this strong dollar policy, and they're going to have to let the dollar slide. And at some point, they have to step back in and reestablish the credibility of the dollar. And I think that's where gold's going to come in.
In other words, you're thinking that maybe somewhere down the line they're going to tie it to gold again.
Yeah, but it'll be a quasi. It'll be phony, because as you said, a true gold standard, you have to be able to go in and exchange your certificate for the real gold. All they're going to do is give some kind of gold cover clause or something to say it's backed by gold, so that they can claim the dollar is stable again. And I suspect they're going to. If I had to predict the point where they would try to defend it, I would say it's $500 on gold.
You mean $500 an ounce? Well, that really would still, even if they had $500 an ounce for gold, that would only give them perhaps $125 billion behind our whole monetary system.
Right.
Because right now, of course, they have, I've calculated it about $350 an ounce. We have the equivalent of about $100 billion in gold. I mean, if you look at the Fed report in the Wall Street Journal, they tell you we have $11 billion in gold, but that's valued at $42. An ounce. Why do they do that? To confuse the people so they can't figure out what's happening. If you value it at $350 an ounce, that would mean we had about $100 billion behind about $670 billion of currency in circulation. And then based upon that $660 billion money in circulation or currency in circulation, we have an overall debt of $31 trillion. I mean, it's the figures are just so unbelievable. And that debt has to be serviced and has to be paid, and people are paying interest on that debt all the time. And pretty soon there's not enough money to pay the interest on the debt, and then what happens? And I think that they realize what's happening, and I think that's one reason, the sense of urgency on the part of the administration to get us involved in this war. It's going to be a wonderful diversion as I think things are going to begin to progressively increase the collapse of this whole monetary system, because of course other countries are not buying our products. We have something like a $450 billion trade deficit again this year, and every year the trade deficit keeps going up. There is no country that has ever spent itself into prosperity. It just doesn't work that way. And, of course, other countries can't buy our product because they're not making that much money. And as we begin to cut back in purchasing here in America, and we saw that over the Christmas holidays with even deep discounts, most of the major markets, sales went up about 1% in December, where it should have gone up 3%, 4%, or 5% over the Christmas holidays. And of course, now they expect it to fall even further. But the American consumer quits buying. Why then, of course, what happens to the people working in the sweatshops over in Malaysia and in communist China today? Of course, they are going to begin losing their jobs, and the whole world economy begins to grind to a stop. Certainly, the European economy is doing terribly. You're looking at well over 10% unemployment in Germany. In fact, German workers are actually going up into Scandinavia looking for jobs today. And, of course, Germany cannot compete, and most of Europe can't compete, because of all of the socialist programs that are there mandated by law. And, of course, the same sort of programs that they're bringing right here in California, which will soon make California non-competitive with the rest of the world. Well, Ron, of course, now, again, the telephone number, if they'd like to get in touch with you, 1-800-595-0561. And, of course, you're suggesting that people get silver coins. Can they get them in smaller increments than the $1,000 bags?
Sure. My basic minimum is somewhere around $1,000 investment, and I do that only because the dealers kind of limit me on what they will. So I try to help anyone any way I can, because I think it's very important for people to try to protect themselves.
Well, now, what about collector coins? And I know there's a lot of people, a lot of gold dealers are telling people, and I got a call just the other day. In fact, somebody, one of the major gold companies, wanted to sponsor my radio programs. And they were just saying that, of course, collector coins have gone up 10% in the last month, and how great that is. And, of course, one reason I'm not anxious to, of course, have a sponsor like that is because I don't think that collector coins are a good investment. Because I think that unless you know what you're doing, you're sure going to get fleeced on it. What are your thoughts?
Exactly. Basically, the collector industry as a group pitch and sell the fear of confiscation. And so they say you have to buy pre-31 coins or pre-33 coins, or otherwise they'll be confiscated and have to be reported and all that. And most of that is nonsense. But it's an excuse to get people to go into an era they don't understand. Because, see, once you get into the collector arena, what is the collector value of a 1907 St. Gaudens? The average person wouldn't have any idea. So the dealers can mark up 25, and that, by the way, that's their minimum markup typically, 25 to 30% markup when you buy it. Well, if you pay that much commission, you've got a long way to go to break even. And these numismatic dealers can say they're up 10%, but you haven't even come close to making up your commission yet, have you?
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Right. So basically you're saying people should not listen to the fast-talking salesman and get the collector coins.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to collector coins per se if a person gets into it and wants to study and make it his hobby and do it right. But just to go blindly to some dealer and say, sell me what you think I need, you're going to typically get ripped off. If they're not ripped off, you're going to pay more than you should, and it's going to take you a longer time to make the investment pay off.
Right. Well, of course, the way things have been going here over this last, 3 or 4 months, we've seen, a significant increase in the price of gold, a significant increase in the price of silver. It's gone from about $430 over the last...
Yeah, 430 on silver, right.
About 430 up to 480 right now, so that's well over a 10% increase in value, and the same thing is true. Gold, not quite that much, but certainly moving very, very well. Oh, what are your predictions as far as the price of gold over this next 6 months or so?
Okay, I mentioned $500 in our previous discussion, and I think that's where gold is going. First, it has to get through 418, 420, and then it'll break through there and make a run towards 500. And I think that's when the Fed's going to have to try to step in and defend it for a time. I don't think we're even close to the top. I think gold, before it's over with, is going to go to the equivalent of 3,000, 5,000, because the whole system is imploding. But the point I would want to make is that while gold is making its break, let's say from this 330 area up to 500, that's at about a 40% increase.
Mm-hmm.
I think silver is going to break through this 5 and then the 550 range. And once it gets through 6, you could literally see $10 to $15 silver by the time gold reaches 400 or 500. Because the nature of the silver market is simply that we have consumed all the silver over the last 20 years. Gold is always the perceived leader. It's the one that leads the charge. And then once gold takes off, gold can't go anywhere without dragging silver with it, ultimately, right? So when you think of the gold to silver ratio of 75 to 1, every dollar that you put into gold would buy 75 ounces of silver. So as the freight money comes into the market, you're going to eat up whatever reserves are left of the silver very, very quickly, because you're chewing them up at a much faster pace. And there's more gold to begin with. So once the world wakes up to the fact there's no silver out there, then it will go very, very quickly, as it did in 79 to 80. It went from $5 to $52 an ounce in 12 months. In 82, it went from $4.78, about where we are today, to $15 in 4 or 5 months by January the 1st. That was from June to January. So silver has a history of exploding much, much quicker than gold when it makes its move. And that's what most people don't see, and that's what I'm desperately trying to get out to people, that it is the investment opportunity of a lifetime.
Well, I think people have forgotten what happened in the 1930s, 1933, when the president nationalized gold. And actually what he said was that you couldn't even get into your safety deposit box. You had to have somebody go into your safety deposit box with you so that there was gold there, they could get it. And, of course, you had to turn in your gold certificates. You had to turn in your gold coins. People don't understand that back in those days, you wouldn't have imagined that sort of thing could have happened, but it did happen. And, of course, as soon as the people foolishly turned in their gold, why, they immediately doubled it. And, of course, the bankers made a tremendous profit. And, once again, the average person was impoverished. I don't think they're going to nationalize gold again. Do you?
No, I don't. I don't think they could. If you think about it, even in 1933 when they called in the gold, that was more a threat than anything else. Now, they did go into the safety deposit box, and they did lock those up. But did you ever hear of any story of the government coming in like a Gestapo into someone's house and saying, we know you have gold and we want it?
No, I think that the average American really had total confidence in his government. He didn't realize his government had created the crisis to justify what they were doing. And that's really what I believe, because the Federal Reserve System, there was no money to get our economy going, but they had plenty of money to send it over to communist Russia and Nazi Germany. But there was no money to get our economy going. And I have the speeches given by Congressman Lewis McFadden at that time. He was the chairman of the House Banking Committee, trying to make the American people realize that they had created this recession back at that time. In fact, we even have a video called The Money Masters, an interview with Milton Friedman, telling how the Federal Reserve System created the Great Depression. But that was used to justify picking up the gold. But the people were had confidence in the government at that time, and they felt that we all had to pull together to get out of the problems we were in, without ever realizing the government had created the problems to justify the reaction. But that, of course, most people don't understand our Federal Reserve System, and certainly the best books for that, The Creature from Jekyll Island, or certainly The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Anthony Sutton. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, just people need to understand that we're a long way from the bottom of this market, that the spin machine is trying to cover up the danger, and yet it's very critical, because we're right at that stage where the thing is about to come unraveled into the next wave down, and it's going to happen very fast and furious when it comes.
All right, guys.
it could come right around at war as, you know, as a trigger mechanism.
Okay, well, thanks so much for being with us, Ron. Our guest has been Ron Brown, and his telephone number, 1-800-595-0561. And I have to, at this time, we bid adieu to our listeners up in the Great Northwest, ask them to pray for our ministry. And, of course, we'll be back coming the first of next week. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan back here once again, here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And this is the time we have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but we certainly ask that you hold your calls at least for a few minutes, for at least 15 minutes, because we have with us on the line Paul and Lorraine Walter, and we're going to be talking about a book that they have republished called The Coming Battle. Paul and Lorraine, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Monteith. Paul will be joining us in just a moment or two.
All right, fine. Of course, you and he have really done a yeoman's job in republishing a book that you'd found. How did you happen to find this book that was written back in about 1899?
It was first published, and it was found in an attic and sold at a garage sale that our son-in-law happened to purchase the copy. And back in 1996, when he gave us the copy to read, because we had been asking him several questions, he said, here, he said, take this and read it. He said, it'll not only answer those questions, but some you never even thought to ask. And as sure as shooting, that's exactly what happened. We were just flabbergasted when we read what this book contained about the early history of the money power in America and how far back it went, and how the booms and busts that we had in the during the 1900s, 1950s and 60s, that, you know, the time I grew up, that it was nothing new, that the monetary system was in deep trouble, And we just never knew about it.
Okay, now, Chris, this fellow recognized what it was all about back in 1899, and he was trying to warn people what the future held. Here we are, we're 104 years later from the time he wrote this book. And everything he feared is coming to pass today. He's long since dead. What was the author's name?
The author's name was M.W. Walbert, Martin Wetzel Walbert, and he predicted in that book, Dr. Stanley, that there's times they're going to come in America that the people are going to wake up homeless on the continent that the founding fathers conquered.
And, of course, who was Mr. Walbert? I mean, where did he get his information?
Mr. Walbert was an attorney. He was an insider. That's about as far as we know. We got his genealogy from his family that lives in Bluffton, Indiana, so we know a little bit about it. But he had a secret life, so to speak, where he was an insider and hobnob with the bankers, and he had a lot of inside information. That's how he got a hold of this, and that's as far as we know. We do know that he was a mayor of Bluffton, Indiana, and that was back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. He was born before the Civil War, around 1860, I believe he was born, somewhere around there, you know, maybe off a year or two. And he was extremely caring of our Constitution. He believed in our Constitution and our form of government, and he saw the wickedness of the centralized money power, and what their ultimate goal was is the world domination and control of the whole world. He saw this. But he didn't kind of name, you know, New World Order and all this, because he really did. They didn't have those words in those days, I guess, or he didn't know. But there's enough in here to, that's the conclusion you're going to come to when you read the book.
All right, fine. Well, so what did he tell you? What did you learn from the book, The Coming Battle?
Well, what I learned from the book is that there is a trio in America that's behind this power. And basically, that's the I call it like a iron triangle, is the corporations, the money power, and the government. And the three are working with the arms around one another, and they want to control the American people. They don't want them to be educated, so to speak, so they can keep using them as a workforce. Don't ask any questions. Just do as you're told. Like that movie that they made, I can't think of the name of it right now, where that's all the people are. It's just working bees. Don't ask any questions, and that's why they're dumbing our kids down in school, so they're nothing more than just workers for the system, and the system can never be exposed because people's light will go out, so to speak, to where they won't be able to discern the wickedness, and that's really what I discovered about the coming battle.
You know, I think it's very interesting. If you look back in history, through all these boom and bust cycles, every time you went into a bust part of this cycle, and they happened in the 1870s and the 1890s, and of course there was another big one in 1907. But each time people are, you know, they see the prosperity, they just never learn from history. They go out and they borrow money, and they hawk their farm, or they hawk their business, or they borrow on their home. And then, of course, their farm. And then, of course, when the economy tightens, they can't possibly pay the interest or pay their debt, and they lose what they have. And that's the way the system is really set up. Now, this has not happened, you know, since the Great Depression. But that is where we are today, because, of course, people have bought all these homes, and they're way overvalued. I mean, there's no logical sense for the values that, certainly where we live here in the Monterey Bay, the value of the homes here, some of the highest in the entire world. But the banks will loan you money, or the savings and loans will loan you money on these houses. In fact, more and more people are borrowing more and more money, you know, and refinancing their homes so that they'll have the money to invest on this, that, and the other thing. That's the basis of a lot of the spending that's going on right now, and the new cars people are getting. They're getting them because they've mortgaged their homes, and my gosh, they can get $50,000 or $100,000 on their homes, and now they can buy a new car or two new cars or whatever they want. But of course, when the time comes and times get difficult, and people begin losing their jobs, then they lose their homes as well. And this has happened time and time again throughout history, hasn't it, Paul?
Well, Mr. Walbert talks about in the book, I don't know, maybe Lori can find this little thing while I kind of put it together in my mind, is that Mr. Walbert says that you can work, spend your entire life working to a rigid, lifelong economy, and at the end, the bankers can sweep away every vestige of a man, of the home that you, and the shelter that you provided for yourself and your family. In other words, you can lose everything at the end. And he talks about that in the book, and then he talks about how farms are set up for foreclosure, how small family farms, how to, in other words, manipulate the commodities market, how they lend money to farmers for his seeds, for his farm equipment, and so on and so forth. And then they watch, then they manipulate the economy, then they watch how he's able to make those payments, and as soon as the farmers got trouble making payments, then they come in and foreclose on his farm, so they set him up. Mr. Walbert talks about this, how small family farms are set up and foreclosed on the poor working American people. He talks about that in the book, and this was going on in the 1800s. And the sad part is, you see, they still haven't woken up to the point that the economy is manipulated and the whole thing is manipulated. Everything is manipulated. Nothing happens by chance. I believe Woodrow Wilson said that, or one of our presidents, and if something was meant, something happened, you can bet your bottom dollar that it was meant to happen.
Actually, FDR said that.
What
Woodrow Wilson said, we actually have a copy of a book he's written called The New Freedom, and he said, you know, ever since I entered politics, important men have come to me, and they're all afraid of someone, they're afraid of something, and they will never even speak about it. When they're speaking critically, they will never speak above a whisper or a hushed voice when they speak of it. And if anybody would like the copies of those pages, since they're out of copyright now, the book was written in 1913. And then we have a letter that I found among Colonel House's papers at Georgetown University, which had been written to him by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and in which Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, well, as you and I both know, the American government has been controlled in the financial centers going back to the time of Andrew Jackson, and I'm not necessarily excluding the era of WW, meaning Woodrow Wilson. Of course, FDR didn't understand that Colonel House understood this. He was part of this whole world occult monetary system, a monetary movement. But FDR, of course, had fallen under Colonel House's almost hypnotic spell, just exactly as Woodrow Wilson had fallen under his spell. But House is one of the key figures. But, I mean, it was so interesting to see FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, saying, in essence, what Woodrow Wilson said, somebody's controlling the government, and FDR was the president of the United States at that time. So he recognized that, and I think that anybody who's really studied what goes on understands that there is always a force working behind the scenes that controls the government, whether the Democrats or the Republicans are in power. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, if you're out there in the listening audience. Our guests this evening, Rain and Paul Walter, were talking about a book that they have published, and incidentally, if you want to know more about it, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927, and we can tell you how to get the book. It's called The Coming Battle. It was actually written in 1899 by Mr. Wahlberg, who was trying to warn future generations of the danger. But, you know, it was so interesting. Apparently, there aren't very many copies of that book that ever got out, or if they did get out, they are no longer available. Isn't that true?
Well, there was three original copies in existence that, to my knowledge, I have one of them. One is, the other two are in different university libraries, and we try to borrow one of them to interlibrary loan, and they will not let it out of the site since our book came out. And those of your listeners who heard about this book before and never purchased it, we're coming out with a paperback that will be out in about approximately 3 to 4 weeks. It should be available.
All right, fine. We'll be making that available as well. We still have some of the copies of the hardbound here. I got a few copies of that, and we'll be getting the softbound as soon as they're available. So people have that option of getting either the hard or the softbound, although you did a nice job with the hardbound copies.
Yes, we thought they came out rather nice, and we wanted people to be able to share them with friends and family and still be able to get them back intact.
Right. All right, fine. Well, now, of course, this story that they tell, and he goes into a lot of the cycles, and what were the periods that preceded 1899 where the bankers had played this game before of making money readily available and then contracting the monetary supply so that the people had no way of getting the money to pay their loans. And, of course, the people couldn't get any money because the bankers had shrunk down the availability of money. Now the bankers could take their farms and their property.
You know, it almost sounds like what you were talking about that's happening right now, Dr. Monty, is that the people are getting loans very easily. They're taking their homes out on loans, cars out on loans, everything that they purchase is on loan. And that's what happened to the family farms back in the 1800s. And they got foreclosed on. And I have a feeling that that's going to be coming soon here as well. Because like Paul said, Thomas Jefferson says that one day we're going to wake up on the very land that our forefathers conquered, and we're going to be homeless.
And I'm sure that's absolutely true. Well, actually, Thomas Jefferson really understood this monetary system, and he tried to warn the people. And this was back in the early 1800s that the bankers, had a plan, and that plan was going to lead to their impoverishment. In fact, I think it's on page 168 of the book I keep right next to me here. At all times, because Thomas Jefferson was one of the wisest people that ever served in the presidency. And here is what he said. Everything predicted by the enemies of banks in the very beginning is now coming to pass. We are to be ruined now by a deluge of paper as we were formerly by the old continental paper. It is cruel that such revolutions and private fortunes should be at the mercy of avaricious adventurers who, instead of employing their capital, if any they have, in manufactures, commerce, and other useful pursuits, make it an instrument to burden all the interchanges of property with their swindling profits, profits which are the price of no useful industry of theirs. Prudent men must be on their guard in this game of robins alive, and take care that the spark does not extinguish in their hands. I am an enemy to all bank discounting bills and notes for anything but coin. But our whole country is so fascinated by this jack-o'-lantern of wealth that they'll not stop short of its total and fatal explosion. And then in parenthesis it says, this took place 4 years later. So basically, of course, Jefferson could see exactly what they were up to. He tried to warn the people because what happens is, everybody's getting rich. My goodness, the stock market's going up. Prices of land are going up. Why shouldn't we mortgage our land and buy more land? And then we'll be able to make more money on that. And of course, unfortunately, man is ruled by two emotions. One is greed and the other is fear. And of course, when times are good, he's ruled by greed. When times are bad, he's ruled by fear. And of course, this is the system that the bankers have played down through the ages. And of course, they really know exactly what they're doing. They calculate this. They create the inflationary spiral. They make money readily available, and then they contract. Well, right at the present time, and since 1982, they've been rapidly increasing their spending. Of course, the government has had massive deficits. And, of course, any of us could live very, very well, if we were living on borrowed money. And starting in 1982, and during the Reagan administration, the government started spending several hundred billion dollars more every year than it took in. And that's when our debt began to rise and rise and rise. And then, of course, you have to pay out interest on that debt. And where do you get the money from? Why, of course, you borrow it in many instances from the banks. And so this is the way the system goes, made a system devised to enrich the bankers and impoverish the people. And people say that sounds like Marxist talk, and you're absolutely right. But because they say it doesn't mean it's wrong. And it's about time the American people understood what's going on. And then, of course, we get into who finances the Marxists, why the same people we're talking about, the Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie Foundations, and many of the great financiers have financed this whole Marxist movement from its inception so they could have a controlled opposition. They don't mind if some people understand it. They'll, of course, utilize those people to discredit their own ideas and to keep the people in playing the game, because it's only when the people quit playing the game that they no longer can work their wiles on us. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And those of you who want to question the fact when I mentioned that the Rockefellers, Carnegies, and Ford Foundations have financed this whole thing, we have republished a book, too. Not quite as old as a book that Lorraine and Paul have republished that is called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It's the story of the only congressional investigation ever permitted of what the great tax-exempt foundations were doing and how they were actually encouraging the very movement which opposed them, the Marxist movement and the communist movement. Lorraine and Paul, as you, of course, circulated this book across the country, how many copies have you been able to get out?
I'd say we probably got out close to 25,000 copies.
And what sort of response are you getting to the book from the people who read it?
Well, if you get online at Amazon, there's about five-star rating from Amazon, which is very, very good rating. Five-star is about the best you can get. And the problem is not enough people are reading it, you see, to buy it, because it's a history book. They heard it on the radio, then they put it on a shelf. But if they really read it, at least the first two, three, four chapters, they'd be able to comprehend, because it's nothing new under the sun. The same thing is happening today that was happening throughout the 1800s. The only difference is it's more sophisticated today because they have computers, they have radio, they have television, they have electricity, they have... But what they had back in the 1800s is just the print media. So the truth really wasn't getting out as much as it is today. And that's why it's important to read a book like this, because it takes you back to the foundation of this country when this whole thing was set up, and it's kind of easier to understand what's happening today when you read a Coming Battle book. So if you get the Coming Battle book by Earl George, read it.
And now, Chris, why don't you tell us some more of the history, the history that Mr. Wahlberg gives us as to the origins of the banking system and how it evolved to where it was in 1899?
Well, one of my favorite chapters in the book is the demonetization of silver. It talks about how silver was discovered in America, mainly in Nevada. One of the largest silver mines was the Comstock Lode in Nevada. And the discovery of silver became the financial liberator of the American people, because gold was minted in larger denominations, like $5, $10, and $20 gold pieces, but it wasn't as readily available. But silver was so abundant that everyone could afford to have a pocket full of silver, but not everyone could afford to have a pocket full of gold. So that angered the bankers, because that this silver did not pass through the toll gates, as Mr. Wahlberg describes. As someone who had silver mine could take this silver ore to the mint and have it melted down into money, and they would print that dimes, quarters, half dollars, silver dollars, and so on, and it saved the American people. So what the bankers did, they concocted a scheme to demonetize silver, so made silver worthless, and it, as Mr. Wahlberg described, that created the largest depression up to that day that has ever hit the continent of the United States, and lasted for, I believe, 5 years, from 1873 to 1878, to where it devastated the American people. People who were wealthy in the evening woke up in the morning for penniless. They lost everything. And then as they demonetized this silver, what they did is they start confiscating the silver put it in vaults and shipped it to Europe. Mr. Wahlberg describes this, how they have done this, craftily done this, and how as the depression and starvation hit in this country because no one could afford to buy anything, they blamed the whole thing on farmers for overproducing food. And, no one was the wiser. They could basically tell a lie as big as the Eiffel Tower, and people swallowed it because, they were the experts, and people are conditioned to believe experts. And when an expert says something, it must be true. That's why he's an expert. He's got his degree on the wall. And, he went to college, and of course they don't tell you that they control the colleges too, because Mr. Wahlberg talks about how they took over influential universities and colleges in the United States to brainwash the academia, so to speak, and keep these intellectual eggheads you know, and as they graduated these college with these pedigrees or whatever they got, then they became, they got into your government position. They became mayors and lawyers and your governors and your county commissioners and so on and so forth, and people never had a chance.
And this is 1899, he's writing this book. So, but, you know, nothing has changed since then, but it's amazing to think that the power they had, you know, there in the 19th century.
Yes, nothing is, it's the same thing today. The only, what's wonderful about this book is it's so easy, you know, it takes you back like a time machine to the foundation of this republic, and it's not hard to understand how this country was set up from the foundation to be destroyed, and how they manipulate. They basically created this by printing and creating this huge debt. They created this huge economy. We wouldn't have this huge cities and the industry if it wasn't for the debt. Of course, you know that, because people could borrow something created that was created out of nothing and create these huge empires. But then there's the times are going to come where this whole house of cards, as I see, is the economy with a big boulder on top, is going to come crashing down, and I believe that the crash is not that far into the future. I know people have been predicting, you know, that Y2K may trigger the crash, but I got a feeling it's coming. When it's coming, it's only going to come when they decide to pull the plug. That's going to come, and when that's going to be, nobody really knows. It could be this year, it could be next year, it could be a year after, but it's, there's no question about it. It's coming, because it's getting worse by the day.
And the other thing is, of course, they may not be able to control this because they've built this phenomenal debt bubble. And, I mean, they've got all this property out there. As we mentioned during the last hour, they have increased the total indebtedness of our people, of the United States, $5 trillion in 3 years. And, of course, that money then was churned out by Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Sally Mae and Farmer Mac, and they've got all of these government corporations pouring this money out, of course, making it available for people to pay ever higher prices for their homes or refinance their homes. But, you know, eventually, of course, you've got so much debt you can't service it. And at that point, you need some sort of a diversion while the whole thing collapses. But the last thing you want, of course, is for the people to realize who's really responsible. And so, well, it'll be the wicked Saddam Hussein that's behind this whole thing. And the American people, unfortunately, an awful lot of them do not understand the fundamentals of economics. And they're probably going to believe that somehow Saddam Hussein is going to be responsible for the severe and the very difficult economic times that lie ahead today. But you get to a point where the only solution, of course, is simply to let the whole thing contract to get down to some point where you can service the debt. And, of course, you know, what the administration's doing, everything they can to keep the economy going simply by giving people more money from not taking as much money away from taxes. But you only have to look and see what's happened in Japan, where they poured out trillions and trillions of dollars to try to get their economy going, and they can't get it going.
Well, they have to keep the economy going to the point until all the ducks are in a row, so to speak, so they can collapse the world economy all at the same time. So if one economy is collapsing a little prematurely, then they prop it up a little bit until, you know, they can manipulate each country's economy to the point so where everything will be collapsed at the same time when the proper time comes, whenever that's going to be. I can see that. And as far as Saddam Hussein, yeah, that's what they're doing. Now, Saddam Hussein is a wicked man, there's no question about that. But what they did is they created this evil that they can fight now as a war on terror. There's no question about it, they created him, because there's articles out there how Rumsfeld was, during the first Reagan administration, was arming Saddam. Then they set him up to invade Kuwait. Then they saved Kuwait from this terrible villain. And, of course, they never finished the job back, you know, during the first Bush administration. Now they got a bigger villain. Now they got Korea on their hands, and that may be lead to World War III. And so what's puzzling to me, and maybe you can answer this to me, Dr. Montes, is that as the September 11th occurred and the tragic incident, you know, that these planes struck the World Trade Center, and we're going after Saddam, I mean, after Osama bin Laden, and all of a sudden from Osama bin Laden, we're going after North Korea and Saddam Hussein. How did all this happen?
Well, you never underestimate the gullibility of the American people. You know, and what's amazing is all the so-called conservative leaders who say, gee, we got to finish up the job we didn't finish up in 1991, and if we don't get Saddam Hussein, he's going to be a threat to the peace of the world. And, of course, they don't understand we left him in power in 1991. We maintained him in power in 1995 when the Iraqi military wanted to overthrow him. They would document that in a book called See No Evil by Robert Byrd, who was a CIA station chief in northern Iraq. And this book even was cleared by the CIA, you know, before it was published. So we've kept Saddam in there for exactly this time. But I hate to say this, but I think there's a script that's being followed. I think that there is a master plan. I read the writings of the people on the other side, and they tell you there is a plan. And they, when they write the word plan, they make it a capital P. And you can read the writings of going all the way back to Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and Alice Bailey, and the modern writings of certainly of Benjamin Cram, and the modern writings of the Lucius Trust. And, of course, it's headed by Alice Bailey's daughter. I believe she's on the board of the current Lucius Trust. And they say there is a plan. There is a plan. And, of course, we are following the plan, although most people don't understand who wrote the plan or where we're headed. So these are exciting times, but all we can do is try to get people educated to understand what's happening and to make whatever preparations we can. And, of course, so we can help ourselves, so we can take care of ourselves, so we can help our neighbors, and then understand that behind this are spiritual forces that, of course, are driving this whole incredible, incredible movement towards a one-world government and towards a new world religion. And the two go hand in hand because, of course, along with this new world order must come the destruction of Christianity and of Judaism as we've traditionally known them. And we're well along the way to doing that because, of course, they've infiltrated our seminaries 50 years ago and changed both the message and the music of the contemporary church.
You know, they have, Donna. Mr. Walbert talks about this, too, how they've taken over the churches and all this back in the 1800s.
He recognized that back even in 1899, huh?
Yeah, that's in the first chapter.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take a break when we get back. We'll welcome your calls. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, our guests are Paul and Lorraine Walter. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that if you're out there in the listening audience and you listen to our programs regularly, you'll agree that it's important that we not only keep our current listeners informed of what's going on, but that, of course, we reach as many people as we possibly can in the time allotted to us. And so we hope that many of you will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And I don't think the world's going to end tomorrow or the next day or for some time, but I think we're in for some very, very difficult times here in America. And, of course, it behooves us to try to inform as many people as we can that we may very well be able to help them prepare physically, spiritually, financially for the times that lie ahead, and specifically to prepare yourself from an immunological point of view or from a preparation for the possibility of a biological attack. And I'm not saying it's coming from Saddam Hussein or where it's coming from. I'm just saying that there is a population control agenda out there. And if you've read the writings of Jacques Cousteau in the November 1991 UNESCO Courier, he talks about the necessity of killing 350,000 people a day. 350,000 people a day. 350,000 people a day. How are they going to do that? Well, they're going to have a black plague or something like that sweeping the world. And, of course, you can read the writings of Bertrand Russell in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, and he makes essentially exactly the same statement. He doesn't use the same figures as Jacques Cousteau, but, of course, the concepts are identical. And anybody would like the pages out of that book, we got the book, so we can be absolutely certain of the truthfulness of what we're saying on the radio. because the last thing I want to do is tell you something that I can't verify. And so we hope if you're out there in the listening audience, many of you will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or perhaps take our magazine, our newsletter, which comes out on a monthly basis. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a copy of our November newsletter, it deals, of course, with what's going on in society and introduction to what's happening financially. But our December newsletter really deals with the current financial crisis and what you must consider doing to prepare for it. So again, the number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war and under attack today. And Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Paul and Lorraine Walter. And if you'd like to know more about their book, you might call 1-800-5-448-927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And, of course, Mr. Wahlberg was writing in 1899 about the influence of these people within the churches.
Yes, you know, speaking about the churches, I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm very politically active here in Southern Oregon, where I live. I ran for county commissioner twice, and of course I'm thinking about doing it again this fall. And I've learned something. My greatest enemy that I have here are the churches. And what I do is I speak about, you know, the destruction of America, and this and that and this and that. And guess what they call me? They call me negative. So when you go to these churches and you sound the alarm bell and you tell them, you know, this is happening, the Mexican ambulance drivers, as the story was in the Washington Times about a few weeks ago, are transporting Mexican patients in Mexico that cannot afford to pay their medical expenses across the border, and because here our law mandates that you have to pay for their health care, and they're transporting them across the border. I wrote a letter to the editor that if this was situation was reversed and Americans were transported to Mexico, the Mexico taxpayers would be up in arms. They'd be marching on the town hall, demanding a stop to this. But here we made a fool out of, and not one peep from the American people. And I went to different churches and I brought this to their attention and said, "Mr. Walter, you sure are negative." I said, "Well, you got to bring sound the alarm and wake the American people up so they will demand a change in the government, seal off the borders, for example, and stop where illegals, now they want, Vincent Fox wants illegal aliens to get Social Security to be sent down to Mexico. So this means now our Social Security, that the people working all their lives for to save up for their retirement, now that's under attack. So there's constantly something new under attack. That's the cornerstone and foundation of our freedom. And you bring that to their attention. Boy, Mr. Walter, you sure are negative."
Well, you know what I would tell them, you know, I am called to be a watchman, as they do in Ezekiel 3. And Ezekiel 33, you may not want to hear any more than the people, the children of Israel wanted to hear. But if I don't tell you, your blood is on my hands. If I tell you, your blood is on your hands and the blood of your family. And believe me, these things are coming to pass here in America, whether you want to believe it or not. And there's always been a conspiracy against God. It's being waged this very, very day, and people better wake up and find out what it's all about. We've got Jonathan actually calling us all the way from Jackson, Mississippi. Hi, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
You've never called before, have you?
No, I just recently found out about your program from a Firefighters for Christ page.
Oh, well, I'm so glad that we've got you as a listener. I hope you'll become a regular listener. And
I will. I'm very interested in this, and I think shows like yours should be commended for trying to educate people. I'm just afraid most people are asleep on these issues, and they don't want to believe the truth. When I try to tell people about things like this, most of my friends just don't want to believe it.
Well, they're going to leave you very, very soon. You just keep telling them. Before long, they're going to be coming to you to ask what's going to happen, because this is the time when we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis. I
right.
Did. Okay, well, what can we do for you, Jonathan?
Well,
you
I wanted to commend you and say that you guys have a lot of chutzpah. And I know that you've probably got a lot of enemies talking about all these big and powerful people like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and stuff. I've read quite a bit about the conspiracy and stuff. And I've got a question for you. I've read some things that say that the Roman Catholic Church is playing a role in this, and I wondered what y'all have to say about that.
All right, fine. Do you want to comment on that at all, Paul? You want
I
me
don't
to?
Know. I think all right, the fine. Churches are part of this.
All right, fine. Well, I agree with you. First of all, Jonathan, have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
No, I haven't.
All right, well, you want to either get the book or get the special. The book's $12.95. I'm not supposed to mention prices here, but anyway, you can either get the book or you can get the A Brotherhood of Darkness special, which is the book, the video, and an audio tape. But what you have to understand is that all of the churches have been infiltrated. I mean, the Catholic Church has been infiltrated, but the Protestant Church has been infiltrated as well. Do you realize that probably up to 40% of Southern Baptist ministers are Masons?
Yes, I've heard.
And so, you know, I don't spend all my time attacking the Catholics, because there are a lot of good Catholics, and there are a lot of Catholics
yeah, sure
who love
are.
The Lord. And so, yes, is there an infiltration within the hierarchy of the Vatican? You only have to read Malachi Martin's very excellent book, Windswept House, if you haven't read it. And it starts out with a satanic ceremony in the basement of the Vatican. And I talked to Malachi Martin. I said, is this true? And he said, sure, it's true. But I have to put it in fictional form.
Well, that's what I was having in mind that
sure.
I had heard about. I had read on a Freemasonry Watch website on the Internet
right.
about that, and I was just wondering how credible that
is. It really is. In fact, we have a list of all the cardinals who are actually members of the Masonic conspiracy.
Right.
In
I've
fact,
seen that
if,
list, too.
If you haven't... we have a four-tape set with Malachi Martin. And in the,
uh-huh.
in the one interview I did not do with him, but my friend John Leffler did, Malachi tells about when they were voting for the current pope. And actually, the current pope wasn't elected on the first ballot. Another pope, another cardinal, was elected. And according to Malachi, as this cardinal was ready to go up and accept the papacy, somebody handed him a piece of paper and said, if you accept, you and all of your family will be killed. Well, needless to say, he rejected the papacy, and we have, of course, our current pope. The average the four-tape set on Malachi Martin gives you tremendous insight into the Catholic Church, written from a Catholic's point of view, a man, a very courageous, a man who loved the Catholic Church, but he saw the problems that it had. And just as I love the Protestant Church, and I see the problems it has, but believe me, every aspect of our life today is infiltrated. They've infiltrated certainly the Jewish religion as well.
Uh-huh.
So but you have to understand there's a common denominator behind everything going on today, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. You're going to have to get my book, Brotherhood
okay.
of Darkness. Okay. Anything else, Jonathan?
No, that should be all for now, and I'm very interested in getting your book. I think your information is very good, and you're a lot more believable than some of the people that I've listened to.
Well, you are getting up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. You're
right.
probably listening on the Internet then, aren't you?
Right, it's exactly
all right. Of course, you can get us on the shortwave, and we do a shortwave that gets in there every day. Your Eastern time, so you are Eastern.
Central time.
Your Central time, okay. Well,
uh-huh.
Then it would be from 5 to 7 every day on shortwave at 5.745 megahertz, or you can always pull all the programs down on the miracle of Internet, and what a wonderful opportunity it is to have to talk to people all across the country on shortwave and Internet every day. God bless you. Thanks so much for calling, and you've made my night knowing we have another new listener.
God bless you, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Jonathan calling from Jackson, Mississippi, where our good friend Dr. Russell Blaylock lives and practiced for many years as a neurosurgeon. And incidentally, we'll be having Dr. Blaylock on the first of next week, next Monday evening, for another 2-hour session. He's written a book a health and nutrition secrets that can save your life. And we've done 2 hours with him, and we're only through two chapters. So I'm going to have to read the next couple of chapters, and we'll cover that. And I think we'll want to get to chapter 16, which will cover how you can begin to build up your immune system and how you would think about dealing if the unthinkable, the horrible should happen. And that is, there should be a biological attack in America. Remember, we've already had one, but of course, George Bush and Cheney, Dick, knew it was coming because they started the White House staff on Cipro the evening of September 11th, fully a week to 10 days before the subsequent attack. Isn't that interesting? And they don't want to tell Larry Klayman, who's already filed a Freedom of Information Act, trying to find out why they went on Cipro, where they got their information an anthrax attack was coming. Can you believe it? They won't tell him? Well, that's just that's a little off the subject. Our guests this evening, Paul and Lorraine Walter, and we're talking about their book, The Coming Battle. Now, it's not their book. It was written by Mr. Wahlberg in 1899, but, it's, you know, somebody once said the more things change, the more they stay the same. And we find that he was seeing back in 1899, 104 years ago, so much of what we're saying today. And he was very concerned about the church at that time, Paul?
Yes, he was. And you know, like, speaking about the churches, what's a preaching here to the people? And I realize that's why the people are not questioning, because they're keeping them down so they don't question the authority. And that's why the evil is getting away with all this, is that Romans 13 says, that Jesus says, that you have to obey government authority.
No, that was actually, Paul said that.
Yeah, but he said you have to obey godly authority.
Right, right.
He didn't
say
you have to obey wicked authority. So what they're technically telling you is you have to obey Adolf Hitler's and Pol Pot's and Idi Amin's and all the dictators of the world. So the lowlives and dictators and homosexuals and the worst human beings that the planet could offer get into the high positions of power. Then they tell you you have to obey these people because they're government authority. And Jesus would never say to us, if he was walking the earth today, that you have to obey evil in government in high places. He says, stand up to him and rebuke him, is what he said. So what these people are doing is they're lying to the American people that Jesus said that you have to obey these wicked people, and that's not true. He never said that at all. He says, rebuke them. And that's the message that I'm trying to get out to as many people as I can. Don't believe them. In fact, if you want to change your church, don't give them a dime. You go to church, but don't put any money in the basket. And if enough people don't support the church, watch them change. They'll change so fast that your head will spin, because money is what keeps them in power. And if they start losing money, they will start listening to the people.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I believe that the ministers who preach the gospel of Romans 13 are very, very sincere, and I know some of them. But this is how they've been taught in their seminaries. Without realizing, of course, that seminaries were infiltrated many years ago. Most ministers will tell you America was never a Christian nation, because that's what they learned in seminary. And they never, of course, understood that the Founding Fathers considered it a Christian nation. The Supreme Court considered it a Christian nation. The people considered it a Christian nation. It's only the ministers today who don't consider it was ever a Christian nation, because, of course, they have been deliberately lied to. Now, there's a fascinating book. It's called Hitler's Cross, and it was written by Erwin Lutzer, who's the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church in Chicago. And he talks about what happened in Hitler's Germany and how the ministers used Romans 13 to get the people to go along with Adolf Hitler. And, of course, the whole story is about how the reason the Nazis were successful was because the ministers would not speak out. The ministers were afraid to speak out. But it wasn't even that. They believed that they weren't supposed to speak out. They didn't have a moral obligation to take a stand against evil. And I believe that we do have a moral obligation. I believe God gave us a Christian country. And I believe that we were greatly blessed by it. And I believe that the reason we are losing this once great Christian country in large part falls on the ministers, who should learn our history and should, of course, tell their people about our history and about our Constitution and about our form of government, which has benefited them so greatly. But tragically, they haven't been educated, and we are now putting on and encouraging people all across America. If you're out there listening, we hope that you'll want to establish an institute on the Constitution in your community. And, of course, we'll tell you how to get the 12-part series put together by Professor John Eismo, Dr. John Eismo, who is a professor of constitutional law. And of course, it's 12 videos or 12 half-hour segments of videos going into the Christian history of America and understanding our form of government, which is never taught in our schools and certainly never taught in our seminaries. And Paul, be more understanding. I know how frustrating it is when you encounter ministers who should know better but don't. And, of course, rather than, being angry with them, try, of course, to get them to read something like Hitler's Cross and have them understand that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And, of course, ministers are to be the leaders in the community and not simply support corrupt politicians and a corrupt system.
Well, I've done that. The problem is, you see, their suggestion that was planted in their head solidified. And you can't undo it. You can't move it.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do, and that is you can move the parishioners. And I would suggest consider getting an Institute of the Constitution. And if you can get 1,000 people educated over this next 2 years, you could win the election. And all you need is a small group of people to get started, and every one of them or many of them will be turned on and want to put on similar programs in their region. So give me a call off the air, and we'll tell you how to do this. We're doing it all across the country. And believe me, once people begin to understand our Constitution and our Christian heritage, and also, of course, I think John Stormer's video and discussion of the biblical history and foundation of our Declaration of Independence is excellent. And so once people understand that, they're not going to listen to the people who are preaching a false gospel in the churches any longer. And maybe they'll continue in the churches, maybe they don't. But they can have an influence in that church, and that's what's so important, is to get the truth to the people.
One of our founding fathers said this, I don't know who, but I'm sure you remember, is, I have given you a godly nation, a republic, if you can keep it.
Franklin.
No, that was Benjamin Franklin, and he was speaking to a woman who was as she was coming out of the convention hall there in Philadelphia.
See, and that's true. Can we keep it? And at the way it looks like right now, American people can't, because they've bought a lie. And I'll tell you something, there's three lies. There's those that are coming out of the electronic media, a television, and the print, and the pulpit. And the pulpit is the worst one, because even though, They're telling you a lie because they swallowed the lie and they're just passing it on. Nevertheless, it's still a lie. And since we're all spiritual beings, the greatest sin is in the pulpit. And because they are the ones that are really destroying America. It's whether they're doing it deliberately or whether they're doing it, not deliberately, but nevertheless, they're still doing it. And since you can't wake the pastors up because they're at least I've tried, and I mean, I'm kind to these people. I'm not mean to them. I just lay it on the line and tell them the way it is, but, you can't reach them. So now I'm trying to reach the people I'm having a lot of success here reaching the people because I have tremendous positive calls at home. Those that can read my columns here, read my letters to the editor, and I nail it right on the head. I don't mince words. I don't beat around the bush. I get straight to the point. And I'm waking a lot of them up. And in fact, last November election, we had about 9 tax levies on, from the library levy to the parks levy to this levy to that levy. And guess what? Everything went down. People were fed up. Everything went down. Last Thursday, a day before yesterday, pardon me, normally we have anywhere from 5 to 10 letters to the editor per day in a paper. Day before yesterday, every letter that was in there was negative. I mean, positive to me, but negative to the power structure, if you follow my meaning. It means people are starting to wake up, and they're fed up, and they see the direction this country is going to, and they see that where the problem is. The only thing is I'm trying to focus their direction into a positive direction so it's constructive instead of destructive.
I amend to that, but, just even get them to start listening to our programs here, and they can get it up in your region, of course, at radioliberty.com, our internet site. Incidentally, the remark, a republic, madam, if we can keep it, of course, that was Benjamin Franklin's remark to a Mrs. Powell, and Mrs. Powell approached him on the steps of the convention hall in Philadelphia and said, "What sort of a government have you given us, Mr. Franklin?" And his remark was, "A republic, if you can keep it." And, of course, that was a classic remark. And actually, somebody overheard that and recorded it for posterity. And I just got that out of Bartlett's quotation. So always remember it was Mrs. Powell that he was talking to. One of those little incidental things which have absolutely no significance, but it sounds very learned. Anyway, it sounds like you're doing a great job up there, Paul, to reaching people. And this is what we need, because people are looking for leadership. They're looking for somebody who believes in what they believe in. And, of course, I just hope that you can get elected up there. Certainly one of our listeners got elected up in the largest county in Idaho, and now suddenly the county leadership, the three county commissioners, and two of them are staunch conservatives. And we need some people there, certainly in Oregon. We do have programs up in Portland. We hope that we're beginning to reach people up in that area. But
well, they have a thing now that I got an email that the Constitutional Party of Oregon, I believe it was, have a rally next week at the Capitol step, because a new state legislature is coming into session, the new state Senate and the House, and it's called a Do the Right Thing rally, and they want to encourage their new state reps and senators to go in there and not to do consensus and play footsie with the devil, so to speak, do the right thing. And we have a website. Go ahead, Lori.
Right. Paul has been working so hard here. Newswithviews.com started about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and it's reaching almost a million people now per month. And he's putting up some of the greatest stories, trying to educate the people, not only in our community but across the nation, and it's even finding its way overseas as well. And it's newswithviews.com.
That sounds like a great idea. Newswithviews.com. Well, we'll certainly want to encourage people to get on that website and start pulling down your information.
Thank you.
Okay, Paul. Well, of course, now just get the people up there. You get them to read, but if you can get them listening to the radio, too. Do you have any decent conservative radio programs up there, or are they more or less...
We have a decent one that holds a public forum once a week, 1 hour a week, but it's the decent people, the family that owns the station, and they're Christians, and they're decent people, but I'll tell you, I'd say they're weenies, if you know what I mean. They're weak.
Very weak.
They're very weak, and they're afraid to stand up to the power structure, to local good old boys, so to speak, because they're afraid that, see, there's a lot of businesses here that advertise on their station, and they're afraid if they rock the boat too heavy that they're going to lose a lot of advertisers, so money has a tremendous influence on the people. And even though they'll do the right thing a little bit here and a little bit there, you can encourage them a little bit here, a little bit there. I try to buy an hour a week on their station, so Lori and I can have a forum on there to educate the people. Never afraid, because I'm too controversial. Say, well, maybe I will lose a lot of advertisers because we have you on there, so we're not going to do that, Paul. And see, because the Christians who go to church on Sunday are basically afraid, the gutless, so to speak, and that's why the evil has so much power. Evil has no power at all. Evil has only power through our weakness. And it's the same thing with a bully. Bully is really a coward, and the only reason a bully is so strong is because he depends on your fear and depends on your weakness, because the weaker you are, the stronger he is. And that's how evil works.
Well, I think that's maybe I could get on the station, and of course I don't talk about the same issues you do, at least not the local issues, and I'm not known up there. But give me a call off the air, and we might talk, see what we could possibly do to begin to get the people up there thinking. And it's really amazing, as we begin to see, after having been on a major station in Southern California there for a number of years, the response we're getting, the growing response you get as people begin telling people, and just as Jonathan back there in Mississippi was, got a tape, somebody gave him a tape about our programs. We know that all across America this is happening. I had a talk the other day from a call from a fellow in Georgia who told me that he listens to our program on a local FM station that pulls it down off a satellite, And then he has a little micro station that broadcasts for about 5 miles around where he is, and he broadcasts those programs right in his area, and then he's passing out the newspapers and passing out the letters and passing out the tapes. So the message is getting out. For me, through what you're doing, and for, I mean, obviously writing those letters to the editor on a regular basis is having an impact.
It is. Are those micro stations legal? Do they have license? Because I remember the FCC was trying to license micro stations, but I don't know if they're passed it or not. This was about 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, the FCC wanted to license them. The big stations didn't want the competition, and so they did everything they possibly could to stop them from being licensed. But if you want to know about the micro stations, you can give me a call off the air, and I'll tell you, put you in touch with the fellow who's an expert on them, okay?
Okay.
Okay, fine. And somebody wanted to know who wrote Hitler's Cross. That was Erwin Lutzer, and we actually carry that book through Radio Liberty if you're more interested in it. Hitler's Cross by Dr. Erwin Lutzer, who we carry on our own radio station every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. If you don't listen to him, tune in here at KFER if you're in this area. Anyway, Paul and Lorraine Walter, thank you so very much, Ben, for being with us. It's always fascinating to have you on the line. God bless you for everything you do. And to get a Southern Oregon straightened out, we'll keep working on Northern Oregon, okay?
Right.
Where we do have it out there. God bless you both.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Good night.
Okay, fine. This is Dr. Stan. And this is a time we have to ask you to pray for America and pray for our leaders and our ministers. Yes, our ministers need your prayer. And try to get them educated. Try to get them to understand the Christian history of America. And let me once again recommend this Institute of the Constitution. If you want to know more, give us a call. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same, I guess Monday now, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
You can use J.P. Ellison and sure, right.
Don't leave, Jeannie.